The next case up for oral argument this morning is Archel Diacono v. Whitehorn.
I'd like to thank the court for the accommodation.
Of course. Good morning, Ms. Morrison. Take your time. Just let us know when you're ready, please.
So my illness can manifest in coughing or gagging, and if it does, I apologize.
It's okay. Take your time.
May it please the court, my name is Janice Morrison, and I represent Salvatore Archel Diacono, William Brown, Susan Miller, and William Sarche in this matter. My clients are the most vulnerable of the population. They are people who needed and currently need round-the-clock medical care in residential skilled nursing facilities. They also happen to be destitute, which should make them eligible to have their skilled nursing facilities paid for under Medicaid. So I'll get right into our constitutional claim. Under Goldberg, Medicaid is a property right which is entitled to due process because the potential for the plaintiffs to be condemned to suffer grievous loss. I can't imagine any plaintiffs that have ever been before this court with more grievous peril of losing human dignity and their well-being than the patients in this matter. Those are the circumstances that change entitlement into a property right. This law has been law for 55 years. The question here is whether the defendants have inserted an unvetted rule that is being used arbitrarily and capriciously to deny these patients their Medicaid eligibility without due process. So let's look at that process. The defendants would have this court believe that MediPACS complained of is merely a billing tool, a way for the facilities to bill defendants. The way the MediPAC is used in practice, in name, and in result is actually a denial of the patient's eligibility. In defendant's brief, page 37, footnote 4, defendant cites cause of action versus Chicago Transit Authority, which is a Seventh Circuit case, saying that this court can take judicial notice of information on government websites. So this Sunday, October 26th, 2025, I downloaded from hfs.illinois.gov form HFS-1156, the form complained of in the complaint. And let me read directly from the form where it states on the form itself what its purpose is. The HFS-1156 is used by the LTC or the SLF facility to notify the Department of Human Services, Family Community Resource Center of admission, discharge, death, or other changes in circumstances of a client which could have an effect on continuing eligibility. Also on the same website, it is the code cited by the defendants in their brief, the Illinois Admin Code 89, section 140.513. It states that the now named MEDI system was formerly known as Recipient Eligibility Verification. The defendants can rename it or state it functions as a billing program, but the fact remains it is what it actually does. It functions to arbitrarily and capriciously deny otherwise fully eligible patients from being denied eligible coverage. So the constitutional question is really easy. Does this impediment to coverage function as denial of Medicaid eligibility or continuing eligibility? Yes, it does. It says so on the face of
it. Is there any evidence that your clients have been denied services or they've been told by Medicaid they're no longer eligible?
Well, the purpose of the form...
Putting the form aside, I'm talking very specifically about your clients. Is there any evidence that they've either been denied the services or they've been told by Medicaid you're no longer eligible?
They have not been denied services. It is the defendant's responsibility, the defendant to provide the services, right? But the state is not in the business of caring for patients. These are private facilities. The state of Illinois, if they had a state of Illinois skilled nursing facility where they paid the doctors, the nurses, the janitors, the administrators, the all the attendant expenses, and they just accepted Medicaid patients, then indeed they would be providing the care. They're not in the business of providing the care. What they're supposed to provide is the money. That's what they bring.
So your harm you've alleged is that they may not get the services or they may not be eligible for Medicaid.
We're saying that this is a de facto denial of eligibility or change in eligibility.
So is there any evidence that your clients have been told by Medicaid that they're no longer eligible, that they may not be eligible?
Medicaid told skilled nursing facilities in turn billed the patients. So they are at risk of losing money.
You say Medicaid told the skilled nursing facilities. What did they tell the skilled nursing facilities? That they weren't eligible? I thought they told the nursing facilities you didn't get the paperwork in on time.
They have a variety of different notices. Some say that the name is spelled wrong. Some say you didn't get the paperwork in time when the paperwork was submitted on the first day that the patient was in the skilled nursing facility, or they do not give notice at all sometimes. It's a very random and capricious, the way that the regulation has been put in is has caused chaos in an otherwise very regulated system of Medicaid and how that system is supposed to work under the state plan. We've alleged in our complaint that they did not get this regulation approved through CMS, which is required for any sort of change in the plan or any sort of change that would affect a patient's eligibility, which on the face of this form says exactly what it does and how it functions within the system is exactly what it does. And in turn, as I said, those patients are being billed. Skilled nursing homes are allowed to bill patients who are not eligible for Medicaid or otherwise have insurance. By denying the eligibility through these Medicaid PACs, they're putting these patients in the exact same standing as patients who have no coverage or who have flat out been denied.
But there's Medicaid. No legal obligation to pay. The billing notice is ineffectual.
That's a legal conclusion. The eligibility.
Well, that's not a legal conclusion. That's just the law.
Actually,
the law prohibits.
The law states that you can't bill. Bill a person eligible for Medicaid assistance from the department. This is effectively changing their eligibility.
No, it's not an eligibility determination. There's no question, and I thought the allegations, and this is a motion to dismiss, the allegations are that these four plaintiffs have been determined to be eligible for Medicaid. This is a question about the admission to a particular facility in each of these four cases and whether that facility completed the paperwork in a timely and effective way to be reimbursed for the care that the facilities are providing for the eligible plaintiffs. The eligibility determination is not made at the facility level. It's made by the feds and the state together, and those determinations have already been made. It's a question of whether this facility can get reimbursed.
To that point,
I have a question about standing. Because if there's an injury here, it's to the facilities for their inability to recover reimbursement for the care that they were providing to these four plaintiffs. And there's no claim for damages in this case. That has been disclaimed formally. This is a claim for injunctive relief only. And two of the plaintiffs had temporary stays in long-term care facilities in which the paperwork was messed up. And the other two have been readmitted to other facilities successfully and have no forward look. Nobody has a forward looking injury. Nobody has a risk of a packet, an admissions packet being mishandled by the state for a future admission. I don't know that there are any allegations that they are likely to be at risk of happening.
That is the entire crux of the case, is that CMS, which is the federal program that is the agency connected with Medicaid, the ABE, the application for benefits enrollment, these patients are approved under the ABE. However, the crux of the complaint is that this particular form is acting as an impediment to eligibility. It states that it's a judgment of eligibility right on the form. It is acting as an impediment to eligibility, in which case, if they are ineligible to receive these services, the nursing home has a right to bill them under Illinois Admin Code 140.12. There is damages beyond just being billed, because what's happening when you have a skilled nursing facility that's providing very skilled, very expensive care to patients and not receiving reimbursement because they've been declared ineligible, you have a lower health care bar. So in the case of my four plaintiffs, it was an amount of $111,373 that would have been given to these skilled nursing facilities. In turn, they can't hire the staff that takes care of these people. So if
Ms. Morrison, your time is up. I think you've answered Judge Sykes' question, so thank you. Ms. Jonick. Good morning.
May it please the court, Assistant Attorney General Lee Jonig for the defendants. This court should affirm the district court's dismissal of the complaint, both because the plaintiffs lack standing and because they failed to state a claim. To start with the issue of standing, the relief that the plaintiffs are seeking here is forward-looking relief. They're seeking an injunction to require the state to change its processes. The injury that they claim are that they have received bills that have stopped accumulating. And so that's an entirely retrospective injury. The injunction that they're seeking, changing this kind of going forward process, would not remedy these injuries. And so for that reason alone.
What about Ms. Morrison's argument that the injury is the impediment to eligibility?
I'm not sure.
Ms. Morrison just argued that because these forms are getting rejected and given the language on the form, that her clients now have an impediment to being eligible for Medicaid in the first place.
There's no allegations like that in the complaint, Your Honor. I'm certainly, they haven't made any arguments to that effect. The only argument that they've made that sort of addresses this issue is that this injury could recur again because they might get readmitted to facilities. But again, that's also not alleged in the complaint. And so for that reason, just based on the allegations of the complaint we have here, they don't have standing because they haven't alleged redressability. But even if they did have standing, the plaintiffs failed to state a claim both for a violation of due process and for a violation of the Medicaid Act. With respect to both of these claims, the plaintiffs' arguments are really stemming from a misconception or a conflation of two different processes that go on within the state. One is the process in which a person applies for Medicaid benefits and long-term care benefits, and that's a process between the resident and the state. And the state approves them, they're approved. They do have to kind of resubmit to get reapproved periodically. And then there's a separate process between the facilities and the state, where the facility sort of agrees to participate in Medicaid, they get approved for Medicaid. So what these packets are all pertain to is the facility's submission for payment from the state. And so if there's some sort of problem, some sort of dispute between the facility and the state about whether something was submitted on time, whether something, can be reimbursed, that's between the facility and the state. And the facilities agree when they participate in Medicaid not to bill residents who are eligible for Medicaid, as these plaintiffs are.
So as a legal matter, this has nothing to do with eligibility.
Correct.
It has everything to do with reimbursement.
Yes.
And so the injured party is the facility, not these plaintiffs.
That is correct. And to the extent that the residents are receiving bills, that's a legal wrong by the facility. Their whole allegation about, a property interest that they've been deprived of, is kind of based on this concept that they can, assert the rights of the facility here, which there's no authority supporting that. They have not been deprived of a property right. And then specifically with respect to the Medicaid Act, they assert two claims under the Medicaid Act. As we addressed in our brief, one of those claims does not state a private right of action. That's the reasonable promptness claim. They have not really addressed that in their reply brief, so unless the court has any questions on that particular issue, we'll stand on our brief.
That's a merits argument.
Yes. Mm-hmm. With respect to setting that issue aside, the plaintiffs don't state a claim for either statute of the Medicaid Act that they've asserted here because, again, they've all received the medical care that they are entitled to. There's no allegation that they were ever in danger of not receiving care. And so, therefore, the state has met its obligations under the Medicaid Act. And unless the court has any further questions on that point, I just want to briefly address this argument that the federal government has not approved the state's system for submitting these admission packets. To start, there's no factual allegations supporting that system is in fact a material change to the state's plan. But even if there was, and we were accepting that conclusion as true, it wouldn't affect the plaintiff's claims here because that wouldn't affect their property rights and it wouldn't affect whether they received medical assistance with reasonable promptness under the Medicaid Act. So unless the court, happy to answer any further questions that the court has. And otherwise, we'd ask the court to affirm the district court's judgment.
Thank you, Ms. Jonick. Ms. Morrison, you used all your time, but do you have anything further? We could give you 1 minute for a rebuttal, or do you want to rest on your argument?
I do just want to rebut a little bit on the process.
Okay, we'll give you 1 minute for a rebuttal.
If the form that they're filling out is a judgment on eligibility the way it says it is and the way it functions within the system, then they are being denied due process because under Goldberg, when Medicaid or welfare is necessary to life and limb, it becomes a property right. If this form is denying my patients their property rights to have those bills paid on their behalf, they are suffering from a deprivation of property without due process. And all it would require is that if the state was going to deny eligibility based on those forms, that they tick a box and notice and appeal rights go to the person whose eligibility is being denied. So that would be a $3 fix to a $1 million problem. And having due process rights is the floor. It's if you're going to deny eligibility and not pay, they're private institutions.
Okay,
so
thank you, Ms. Morrison.
They're volunteering, basically.
Thank you. Thanks to both sides. We will take the case under advisement.